Mayo was not happy about that.
Dude, we just didn't record the entire first 5 minutes of that.
Seriously?
God.
That's my bad.
No. It was recording. It was my bad on the board.
Oh,
okay. It's my bad from when we were checking the sound earlier. Thanks to a listener who said, I can't hear you guys. Oh. We can hear ourselves fine. Damn it.
Well, you just missed some awesome Christmas talk, some Whataburger talk, and then just general talk. But we're getting...
Live right now.
Yeah. Yeah, Delonte. But now
we're going down, sucker.
All right, dude, time out.
No more?
No, it's freaking Ustream. I'm gonna put all this on the podcast. Me and Ustream are about to have blows.
Are you going to go blow for blow, toe for toe, basically?
All right, how's that?
Are you asking me or are you asking the world?
I'm asking my boy, John's here.
John's here? Or John here?
Here.
Oh, okay. Is he our Jamaican friend? Because I hope so, because his name would be John in Jamaica.
No, it's a different guy, but I appreciate you for debugging the technical shenanigans. This is below my quality, my standards.
I threw you off by the orange and white, basically.
All right, anyway.
I'm waiting for what you're doing.
You're going down, fucker.
Emphasis on possibly when I say possibly live from the Ted Jones Broadcasting Center in Trophy Club, Texas. It's the definitive quasi-independent podcast covering your once-upon-a-time world champion Dallas Mavericks and sometimes the NBA. It's the Mavericks Outsider Report. I've already re-racked twice here, so I'm saying this very fast. I'm Rylan Rowe. I do sports. He's balling with Brian. Brian Gutierrez of MavsFastBreak.com, two-man game. And that's just kind of how things roll on a podcast. Thanks to our stream listeners for alerting me to a horribly, horrendously stupid technical situation that I introduced that we have now remedied. Appreciate you guys.
We love you.
Love the diehards.
This is why you catch the stream.
You just
don't know what's going to happen.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
It's spontaneous.
Well, here we are, Brian. Episode 68. I think, as we've mentioned to no one but ourselves, it's Monday, December 17th, 2012. 4 days away from the end of the world. 8 days away from Christmas.
What's the thing you want to happen for this episode since we got no guest?
I want people to call since we have no guests.
What's that number? I already forgot it.
214-317-4787. Give us a call because...
One more time.
214-317-4787. Brian's eating Whataburger. He brought it into the house just to tempt me, and there he's crinkling his bag up. We want you to give us a call because this is a big picture show. We haven't met in 2 weeks. Brian was making the point earlier when we were talking amongst ourselves to microphones because that's what cool people do.
Dude, walkie-talkies.
That it's been kind of a light schedule, and we were talking about how this season, it just kind of lends itself to more big picture analysis anyway, because it's just kind of hard to get a beat on expectations.
Big picture.
For the team.
OJ Mayo got punched in the nuts.
So if you find the need to comment on our topic or comment on our lack of topic, by all means, give us a call. Throw us a curveball. We don't mind. It makes things fun. Like I said, we're screenless, we're producerless, we're aimless, we're generally worthless, and you can... pretty much just dominate and dictate what happens here, because if the phone rings, I'm going to answer it. That being said, episode 68, we've already wasted a lot of time, Brian. Let's just get right to it.
Mayo got punched in the nuts.
Mayo got punched in the
Sacramento ding-ding. Lost.
Sacramento lost. And I watched that entire game, and I don't remember anything about it.
That's the main... I remember Sacramento was...
That's like the hallmark of this team this year.
They were terrible at basketball in the second quarter, Sacramento.
Yeah. I do remember that.
It just means that... Keith Smart is probably going to lose his job eventually because Sacramento just doesn't have an identity. If DeMarcus Cousins is your identity,
that's trouble.
You're going to get fired, basically. So he's
that guy's just a lotto ticket, and you know how lotto tickets generally end up.
Hey, he's Landry Locker's lotto ticket,
basically.
That's
fine. That's fine. Landry can hitch his wagon to that if he wants.
I would not. You would have to pay me.
I mean, he's talented. He's a great talent. I mean, you know, you don't see guys like that in terms of big men with that kind of versatility and touch around the basket. They don't come along every day. I think that's why he's a lotto ticket, but he's a knucklehead. And when you got O.J. Mayo calling you out, speaking of which, you know, that was kind of, some people didn't really like what O.J. had to say after the game. Do you have any quotes on that? Do you have that pulled up?
I don't have it pulled up, but I know I want to, I think you're where you're going is fun to talk about, because
I think you probably know what I'm going to say already, which is that
people are basically saying, what are you doing, Mayo, getting on your high horse about maturity and class and everything?
Irony, but I liked it because I want a little static. I mean, this is kind of a year where, like I said earlier when we weren't recording, that, you know, the Mavericks are kind of searching for, you know, their place in the pecking order. And a lot of these guys, you don't know whether they're going to be here next year or maybe after mid-February even, depending on what happens. And, you know, a little bit of static, a little bit of poking the bear, I don't mind at all. And I think O.J. Mayo has acquitted himself quite well this year. It's going to be interesting to see what he does when Dirk gets back. But he's done fine. And look, man, you get hit in the gones, you get to talk. So I didn't see the productivity in sort of criticizing him being the guy to say something. I kind of liked it. I would have liked it if it was any Mav, because I'm a fan of the team and, you know, go get them. But it was interesting coming from Mayo. And he's right, man. Cousins is
he's got
Cousins
mental
is a mess.
Issues, as he said, basically. He's a guy that could be the another key thing that he said was he could be the face of the franchise, but it doesn't look like he wants it.
He wants it. And people said, oh, don't say mental issues. He meant it from the standpoint of an athlete trying to find his place on a team. He has mental issues relative to executing his job to the best of his ability. It wasn't like he was trying to play. Oh, Mayo wasn't trying to be a psychologist, so if you're reading Mayo's quotes, you don't have to try to be one either. Lighten up. It's sports.
He also said he's immature, man. Big maturity problem. Hopefully he'll grow out of it and become great. He definitely has the talent to.
He does.
That's what it comes down to. He has the talent. He just has to get his head on straight.
As we were saying, and that's why that's why it's dangerous to build your team around him. And that's Tyreke Evans was out.
Yeah, knee issues.
So I don't know what to make of that one, man.
They're a terrible.
Like
team.
I said, I don't remember anything about what is wrong with me. I watch these games, and then I can barely, with the exception of Boston, I can barely remember a game that I watched. It's like the details just wash over me. And I'm sitting there, and I'm watching the game, and I'm tweeting about it, and I'm internalizing it all. But I don't know if it's the fact that there's just Rick is still searching for a rotation that works. And so every time I'm watching, I'm having to retake stock of who's on the court and what, okay, who we got out there. And then it's such a wild-ass lineup, I got to take another minute to try and comprehend what position everybody's playing on the court, because we're playing nine guys under 6'1" and just saying Nelly ball, roll it out there, you know, or whatever random thing that we're trying to do to, you know, make something work. And it's hard for me to process for some reason. I don't know, man. I need my basketball snuggie back. I need
yeah,
that.
You do.
Once I get my basketball snuggie, then I'll have my
you're locked in.
My point of reference for processing the basketball that's happening on my TV.
He's the compass.
Or in front of my eyes, and everything else will be okay. What was the final score on that Sacramento game?
I just deleted it, so it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't really matter.
No.
No
convincing win.
Did you get any takeaways out of that game? Obviously, I don't remember anything.
Not too much. I think the more interesting game, honestly, was the Boston game.
The story of the week, or the 2 weeks since we last talked, is that Boston game. That Boston game was big, dude.
As you talked about, it was basically nine guys under 6'1" playing crunch time at the end outside of Sean Marion. I didn't have a problem with the small ball lineup.
I don't have a problem with anything as long as it works. Now, it's one thing to be, I might not have said that about Nelly 8 years ago, but that's something that you're talking about in the context of a season plus or more, multiple seasons, and how is this guy utilizing, you know, the resources that he has, and how is he acquiring new players and expecting to use them? That's Nelly's whole bit. We already know Rick is bound to just throw duct tape and bailing wire out there whenever he wants.
And makes it work.
And just because he's searching, and there is no better time to be searching than right now with the Dallas Mavericks. So, no, it didn't bother me at all. I thought it was funny, but here's what kills me about it. I like that it go with what's working, mm-hmm. and it kept you in that game, and you almost won it. In a hostile environment on the road, triple overtime.
Double.
Double overtime, sorry.
Felt like triple.
It did to me. So, The thing that kills me about it, though, Brian, is that it's an indictment of what the hell is wrong with our front court.
Yeah, I mean,
there's a bunch of guys that should, and nobody, everybody's underachieving in some fashion. There's a bunch of guys that they all bring something a little bit different, talking about Kamen, Brand, and Wright, I guess, really, primarily. I mean, Marion's a front court player, but he's kind of exempt from this discussion.
He's exemplary.
He's been balling. We need to touch on how well he's been playing lately as well. Three straight double-doubles or something like that. But anyway, take those three guys. Sarge James has kind of dropped out of the rotation here a little bit lately. But each of those three guys brings something a little bit different to the table, all three of which are needed, and each one of them is underachieving in either that area or another area to a significant enough degree that Rick's hands are kind of tied. Like, he just can't really lean on them the way that he needs to be leaned on. It's almost like I used to have this dude that worked for me, and he was the smartest cat. I mean, he was just incredible. Went to Rice, super smart, big basketball fan, by the way. And you'd give him a project, and he would knock it out. I mean, he would do it as fast as he could, and he'd have it done, but it would be like to 85% precision. His intelligence and his talent led it to be something that you could use, and it would work. But then, you know, a few weeks later, you'd go in and find the holes and the cracks in the dam, and he'd be like, oh, yeah, I was going to go back and fix that. Oh, yeah, I was going to go back and fix that. And so what it is you've got an asset that you should be able to use, and yet you can't use it to the best of your ability, and yet you still have to use it because that's what you've got. And because, like Chris Kamen, you got to have his scoring right now. I don't care what he's doing that's bad enough on any other aspect of the court. You got to have his scoring right now with the way the lineup shakes up. So you got to find a way to use that without also hurting yourself. So you can't really lean on it. Kamen's got that problem. Wright, obviously, can't rebound to save his life. And then Brand, you know,
he just floats.
Yeah, I feel like he's in and out. You know, he's definitely in a better place now than he was to start the season. I mean, mm-hmm. Would you disagree with that?
No, not at all.
I feel like that's pretty evident.
Yes.
But I'm starting to notice, like, we've reached a new plateau with him. Like, his production over the last 3-4 weeks is leveled out. It's better, but it's kind of a new plateau. It's flattened out, you know, 8.6 rebounds, whatever. Not too terribly efficient offensively. Where's the defense? I feel like his defense isn't there, and that's supposed to be, dude, still got long arms and a big brain. He should be able to, you know, make the things happen on the defensive end, and it's only in spurts.
Right. I agree with that, and especially with Kamen, it just seems like no matter what, with his big issue, it's rebounding and just lateral movement altogether. But if you stick him 15 to 17 feet away from the basket, he's going to hit mm-hmm. most of the jumpers that you leave.
And you got to have that right now because everybody's quadruple teaming OJ Mayo.
Yes. And if they're not doing that, the ball is out of bounds on a
they're
turnover.
Face guarding him, ass guarding him, shoulder guarding him,
nut guarding him.
Nut guarding him if you're they're Boogie
making,
Cousins.
They're making sure of that. It just seems like, yeah. Especially in the Boston game, they had to make the adjustment because they couldn't do anything defensively with their bigs.
The thing is that that's Elton Brand's job singularly above those other guys. Those other guys have to do something up to a certain level. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Rick is the type of coach that if they don't get to that level defensively in terms of energy and executing on the scheme or whatever, you know, he's not going to play them. But it's not their job to be the alpha dog in that role. It is Elton Brand's job, and I don't see that he's doing it. I mean, Kamen, his role is, like you said, to step out and hit some of those mid-range jumpers facing up if he gets an open look, or he can go to work in the post. He's pretty crafty down mm-hmm. there. He's doing that fine. He's doing what he's expected there. He's falling short on the other things, but at least the things that he's supposed to be good at, he's been good at. Brandon Wright, same, but maybe not quite to that level. He's been pretty inconsistent, but he does still bring pretty good energy when he's, you know, when he's
his
in the
shot,
game.
His shot's been there.
His shot's been there. His touch around the basket's been there. His weak side shot blocking when he is in the game and gets into the flow of the game has been there. So there you go. Once again, that's what he's expected to do, and that's what he's doing to a decent enough level. Elton Brand, though, you need to be defending, brother. You need to be using your body to box out and get some boards, and it's not happening often enough. We've seen times, and I've talked about it on previous episodes, where he seems to more or less impose his will defensively on a string of possessions. Mm-hmm. Man, he gets fired up and it looks good, but I need to see that for longer stretches, and I'm guessing that that's what Rick's looking for too.
I've used this analogy before. It just seems like the biggest thing Rick is trying to do is plug a hole as water's starting to leak out. But as soon as he does that, he has to open another.
Chewing gum in this hole, and then he's wadding up a napkin and sticking it over here. And I mean, it's a total mess.
It's just a short term fix, and then
we're lucky he's our coach.
Yes,
there's two things that this team had better thank God for. One is that Rick Carlisle is their coach, and two is that OJ Mayo has been able to do what he's done and exceed expectations in history thus far this year.
And Dirk isn't dead.
Well, of course. You take those two things away, and this team has four wins, man. I mean,
Sacramento, Washington. Bad.
It'd be bad.
They'd be terrible. The other big thing with the Boston game was just the turnovers.
28 turnovers. Yes. That's rec league. Even in double overtime, 28 is too damn many.
It's just bad.
I mean, you have 26 instead of 28, and you win that game. There's a lot of good things to take away from that game. The way they fought back, the way that they were able to execute with that smaller lineup, those were the guys that had the energy and showed the guts and the grittiness, and I'm sure Rick loves all those guys for it. Collison had a pretty good game. Mayo had a good game. Carter was pretty good.
Fisher was nice. Good defense and stretches.
Yes,
Dante Jones defense.
Fisher with some good defense on Paul Pierce, to whom he probably gives up at least 5 inches. I mean,
that's one thing.
And Paul Pierce is still pretty good, even though he's 34, I guess.
That's one thing I've noticed with Fisher this year is if he gets switched in the mid post or down on the block against a bigger guy, he does not back down.
That's because, and we say this at least once a month on this show, defense is about a lot of things, but the two things that you can have to lay the foundation on defense is want to and smarts. Mm-hmm. And obviously, those are in everybody's control. And so Fisher's being a veteran, and he's a strong guy, and he's very heady, smart guy. He's able to do that, and he did against Paul Pierce, which when at first I'm like, oh boy, here we go. But it worked out.
It worked out. But going back to the 28 turnovers, Boston had 34 points off of those turnovers, which is the game right there.
I just don't understand what causes it. And this was my thesis coming into this show today, which is all along throughout the offseason and very early in the season, I maintained my theory, which was that this team is going to be, if nothing else, fun to watch. Because you're going to have youth, you're going to have some quickness, you're going to have a bunch of guys kind of trying to prove their worth, whether it's to the Mavs or to another team. And
bless
so,
you.
Man, all along, it was going to be fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be fun to watch when you turn the ball over like Rylan and Matt Clifton and Mark Jenkins in the Grapevine Rec League. And that's what's happening.
That's a name drop.
How is that happening? Two guys who won't even listen to this damn show. But if they were here, they would know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
How is that happening? It's high school stuff. What did Rick say yesterday? You can't expect to throw the ball through a guy's nose and have it come out his ass. That's totally true. That's what's happening. You're having, just indecisiveness and, oh shit, okay, I guess I better just keep throwing this pass right to the defender, or just brain farts that don't go right to a defender but just go right out of bounds or right into a passing lane that it's easy for a guy to cheat over and get it. It kills me. If not for that, I mean, there would be different things to talk about with this team, but right now,
that's just the obvious.
The turnover problem is so bad that it's like the giant cloud of crap that just blocks out all sunlight on every other thing that you'd want to talk about on this team, because it's just, you're automatically, fighting from behind from day one, digging yourself out of this hole, because you know that at some point, the turnover disease is going to hit you. And it's funny, listen to how our good friend Mark Folliwell calls a game now. There will come a time in the game if it's a close game, you get a couple turnovers in a row, he starts escalating the call, and it's like he starts sensing it, and you can hear. Whereas before, if that happened, I think it would be more of exasperation or surprise or whatever, but he starts sensing it. You can hear the, oh shit, here it comes, in his voice. It reflects the entire fan base. We're like, here we go.
That definitely is the big issue that makes everything pretty meaningless in the big picture, because they can easily control that issue. But the thing that I take away with it as well is that it just comes in surges. There's minutes where they'll go without a turnover. They'll maybe have like two turnovers in a quarter, but then they'll randomly have seven or eight in a quarter, and it just pops out of nowhere. But the biggest thing that I can only grasp at is that they obviously miss Jason Kidd in that aspect, because minus the mistakes mentally he had last year, he did a good job controlling the ball. And then in other situations, you're missing Dirk in the aspect of when he gets the ball, he's usually making the right decision with the ball. It's either going to be a shot or he finds the open man.
Yeah, but there's a lot of teams without Jason Kidd, and there's a lot of teams without a Dirk there's a lot of teams whose best player might be as talented as OJ Mayo, or even a little bit more talented, but they don't make stupid high school or even this is like middle school type turnovers sometimes. It's just, and these guys have played with each other enough now and have had enough time together that at the very least, collectively, there should be an ability to have some level of expectation on where guys are going to be on the court and where to go in certain situations. And I know that, and we talked about, remember when we had Skin on a couple weeks ago, we talked about this for like 20 minutes about how the offense works and how Rick sets it up and how, you know, you're not running sets with option one, option two, option three. There's places guys want to be. They're playing off of each other. It's spacing. It's geometry. I mean, that's all legitimate, but it's been long enough now where that needs to have been internalized. I'm thinking through it in my head as somebody who, as I said earlier, watches the damn game and then forgets what happened the next day because I got too much other shit going on in my head. But I'm sitting there thinking, okay, situation is X. Let's try to do Y. The defense is doing this. The defense is doing that. You know, I just feel like, I don't know, it's like this mental plague. It's a mental plague is what it is.
It's just that, to me, they're having to rely on guys that aren't as good facilitators as I thought they would be.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that, total theory that I'm just totally spitballing right now, but is it a possibility that because these guys are being asked to step out of their comfort zone, but also are trying to prove that they can do it, is it a standpoint of there's too much second guessing going on in the mind? Because all this could be avoided if you just decide when you get into a situation that you have a fallback option that is simple and direct. I mean, the things that happen with these games, Brian, with guys just not coming back into the backcourt to help a guy who's trapped. Mm-hmm. Everybody's so worried about where to go be on the court sometimes, or trying to make the optimal, it's like they're trying to make the optimal pass or the optimal decision every time. Well, you know, sometimes it's not there. You don't make it. You got to have a bailout option.
Right.
You've got to have, if you're a guard, you've got to have that option that enables you to turn back over your shoulder and dump it out to the guy who was coming up around the weak side. I mean, that's eighth grade. I think that there's such an air of mental, I don't know, just gymnastics going on in these guys' heads that they're just losing sight of simple, fundamental, you know, don't beat yourself.
I think I can buy into that, because it seems like they understand what's going on right now. They're trying to hold on for dear life while Dirk is still out. They're trying to do as much as they can as an individual that will help the team collectively, but maybe they're thinking too much. They're trying to do too much.
Definitely overthinking going on. Lots of overthinking.
And again, I think it also goes back to the point of some of these guys are not as good in terms of facilitating as I originally thought they were, but these things can be easily correctable. It's just frustrating in the sense that they haven't been able to do it yet. Before we head to break, we probably need a quick hit the last two games. The biggest thing out of the Toronto game, the three streak ended.
Was the 3-point streak, yes. Which got taken away.
Derek Fisher had it, and then it was like, yank.
Yeah, explain to me what happened, because as this was going on, I was on the way to the Mucky Duck for the Ben and Skin Christmas
Another
Spectacular.
Name drop.
I got there, and it was most of the people in the bar weren't aware that at least the people that I talked to, weren't aware that the three streak was in jeopardy.
Was one of our friends extremely drunk and didn't know at the time?
No. Oh, okay. Nobody at that time was drunk. It was like 8:15.
Oh.
At least not that I could tell. Maybe very lightly. Maybe just a tiny bit. But anyway, nobody was aware. And so like 2 minutes after that, I was ready for this could actually be fun. Everybody's going to get in on the three watch. Mm-hmm. Well, right after that, Fisher hits what looked like a three. And now, this is terrible. Move on. Attention goes elsewhere.
Right.
And you don't realize when you don't have audio that the three got taken away. So this whole time, for like an hour, I thought that we had a three and everything was golden. And then Zach K of Arlington, another Twitter guy out there, ZK Mavs with a Z. You should definitely follow him. He's quality. He says, man, we need a three. And I was like, dude, we got one.
Right.
He says, no, we didn't. I'm like, come on. I gave it like a Darth Vader. No.
I saw that.
Come on.
It was just the Jason Kidd three, basically the foot on the line.
Yeah.
And
big toe problem.
The thing that sucked about that was that they were going to review it, but the game dragged on for like another minute and a half to 2 minutes of game action before they got the dead ball to where they could review it. So no one knew. So.
Yeah, it just kind of got swept under the rug.
Wow.
Man, this is just wheels off today. So, yeah, that may have well been one of the worst losses I remember the Mavs having in the last several years. That was just bad. Couldn't make a shot. Couldn't do anything. Toronto had lost 12 of 13.
Six in a row.
Which, I mean, I guess maybe you have to implement the do theory, which is their do, but law of independent trials disproves the do theory, which is why you never win in roulette betting on red and black, because red or black are never due.
Wesley Snipes always bets on black.
So, yeah, he does. So, I don't know if there's anything to be taken from that Toronto was just primed to do something decent for once. Good for Dwayne Casey.
Yes.
Don't want him to get fired.
No. But, well, he can come back if you want.
Well, that's true. Maybe we do want him to get fired. But, come on, man. That was a terrible game. There's just... How does that even happen? I just don't understand how you had some time to recover from Boston. It wasn't a back-to-back. I understand that you had a double overtime game, and I just don't understand how you come out so flat.
The only thing I can think of is that it's spitting in the face of what you said, but they're just punch drunk from what happened. They're like the 28 turnovers. I know Rick was giving us the hey, good job, good effort, guys. I know I should be beating you upside the head based off of that performance, but I'm giving you positive reinforcement. But they were just sunk from that game. That's a frustrating game to lose, but it's disappointing to see that carry over.
What bothers me, though, Brian, is that game against Toronto was one that, in the quest for 500,
you needed.
Without Dirk, you really had to have that one.
Yeah.
So that sucks. And then the following game on the second night of a back-to-back, it was close against Minnesota, but ultimately it fell in overtime.
Doesn't matter if Rubio is back.
Doesn't matter. Brian told me before the show today that he actually wants to be Rubio.
For one day.
Just for a day.
Just for... I saw on YouTube, on Twitter via YouTube, a highlight of a Ricky Rubio, like, sidearm scoop pass to Kevin Love in their game tonight. And it's just so nasty, man. And then you need to find the clip of his first nasty dime in the game against Dallas where he just dropped it between Elton Brand's legs to Greg Stiesma, of all people.
That's gonna really change the NBA League Pass situation.
They're going to be a fun team to watch.
Yeah, I'm going to definitely be watching them
a little bit here and there. I told Ryland, one day, give me 5 hours on the court as Ricky Rubio, and I can die happy.
Now, we need to get to a break and move on, but real quick, before we forget all about that Minnesota game that went into overtime, I didn't see the game at all. I listened to the last 2 minutes of the game on the radio and saw the last little bit of overtime on TV after, Minnesota had run away with it. But the thing I remember, which is something that always seems to happen with the Mavs this year, is that they had their opportunities to go down and get a score, and they just didn't do it. And that's going to be... That's the curse of no Dirk, man. It's hard to get too riled up about what a team does when they play close. Same thing happened in Boston. They had six possessions in a row or something where they had an opportunity to take a lead and didn't do it. So it's like all of the things being equal, you can kind of be happy with little bits and pieces and not get too riled up because, man, they don't have Dirk. Triple team Mayo and, plus they can't take care of the ball right now and they're completely mind-effed when it comes to that. So that's what needs to be fixed. You can't expect somebody to offensively execute to any degree of excellence when not only are they missing their best player, who's one of the best offensive players ever, but they can't even take care of the damn ball, and they're so, you know, worried about that that it just kind of hangs over everything.
It goes back to the point, in the three losses, they averaged 21 turnovers. It's just...
Got to fix it.
It's terrible.
Fix it, Brian.
I can't fix it.
Tell somebody to fix it.
I could, but then they'd yell at me. Because I could say, hey, you need to fix the turnovers, and he's going to look at me, and then I know that I just need to walk the other way.
You're just
going to up the stairs.
Feel very uncomfortable?
Yes.
Well, that's it, dude.
That was a healthy, therapeutic look at the week that was.
What are we doing next?
We're going to look at the long-term aspects or projections, diagnostics, analysis, analytics of OJ Mayo and Darren Clawson.
What are we supposed to make of these guys? Do we even know if we should expect to want to expect to keep them to expect to want to? So, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, that's what we're going to talk about.
Basketball.
On the Mavs Outsider Report.
Whataburger.
We're taking super quick breaks today, Brian, because we fell way the hell behind earlier when I was unable to do my only job, which is to make sure that this thing is engineered properly. And I do once again want to send out a big thanks to my man, John's Here, J-O-N-S Here, H-E-R-E, on the stream for pointing out that you couldn't hear us. Brother, if you hadn't done that, Brian and I might have sat here for 2 hours and talked while it was recorded nowhere, which did actually happen once when the iMac crashed on me. I mean, iMac, dude. Macs don't crash. Macs are superior.
Except for that one time.
Once you go Mac, you never go back. But that's one of like the 5 times it's crashed, and it was when I had an unsaved podcast, and we even had follow on for like 40 minutes.
That was a good one, too. That was a damn good one.
Totally wasted his time, but whatever.
He still loves it.
His time's not that valuable anymore.
He loves it.
So yeah, we're back now, and we're going to be talking about future stuff.
We're talking about Moroccan meatballs, too.
Yeah. I got a good recipe for that. If you want a little tip, holler at me on Twitter.
Rylan likes the spicy meatball.
I like it, a spicy meatball.
So we're gonna look at OJ Mayo and Darren Clawson. These guys are.
We talk about them every week.
Basically, they're the two main guys we talk
about.
Here's
why we talk about them every week: is because when they play well, the Mavs play well. When they don't play well, the Mavs don't play well.
They're youngins too. They're little babies.
Period. Comma. End of story. And part of the job of this season is supposedly trying to. Disposally, what did I just say? Supposedly, trying to figure out what these guys have and how much it's worth and whether or not it's worth hanging on to either of them. OJ Mayo has a much publicized player option for about $4 million next year.
4.5, 4.8.
Which he is most certainly not exercising.
I'm going to shock the world and keep that option.
Yeah, so he is going to be...
I'm not in it for the money.
An unrestricted free agent going into the summer. And then Darren Clawson...
He's going to get... Paid.
Yeah, they have a team option on Collison, right?
Yes, they have the right to a first refusal. They picked up his, they'll have the qualifying offer.
Oh, okay, they have the qualifying offer out. Okay, all right. I have to always look up the rookie contracts to figure out what stage they're in. So, anyway.
He's in Roddy Bubois state, basically, which is a totally, it's almost the same.
I don't know. We might have to dissect that.
That's the next segment.
On a deeper level.
Yes.
So
tell me what you think.
Both of these guys, there is some level of decision to be made, although obviously with Collison, you know, the qualifying offer is X, and then it just becomes whether or not anyone else
throws them dollars.
And I want to talk about him first, because honestly, I'm starting to think that's a shorter conversation.
I was just looking at his stats. 12.2, 5.4, that's not terrible, but it doesn't flow.
No,
not at all.
No. I think that... I think that he's a change of pace backup.
I agree. He's a point guard. He's also a tease. He's a point guard that...
That's true. He will tease you a little bit.
He is a point guard that...
Not enough to pay him, though.
No. He's a point guard that, on a playoff contending team, he's going to be that J.J. Barea guy that changes it.
He needs to be able... The thing I think that I've learned, having watched him now for...
Because you wanted to be patient with him.
20-plus games. Oh, I was like... I was driving the Collison patience bus because this is... That's the bus we're all supposed to be riding this year.
Is that where the patients are in the bus, or...?
It could be patience TS or patience CE or some of both. Uncle Mark told me, you know, I gave Uncle Mark my $1,000 or whatever this year, and he said, okay, Rylan, this is, you're supposed to be patient this year. And I said, okay. And so, you know, I've been trying to be patient now. And so, yeah, I've been driving that bus on Twitter, and I've been saying, hey, be patient. And I've been patient, too, and I'm still patient. I'm not going to, like, get all fired up about what the guy is or isn't doing, but I am going to try now, after, what are we at, like, now, 25 games?
Yes.
I'm going to try to evaluate what I think he is, and I've heard other people say kind of the same things that you just said exactly relative to J.J. Barea, different because he's not
Puerto
so,
Rican.
So small or so Puerto Rican. But still, I think what I've learned about his playing style is that he needs to be able to go into the game and be able to put his head down, balls to the wall, quickness, rip and run, push the ball, not have to make a lot of decisions, not a bus driver. It'd be interesting to see if they could have him kind of playing off of space the way they had JJ playing off of Dirk when Dirk comes back. If you want to compare
just like
him
the,
to JJ.
The extremely small two.
But he doesn't have that shot that JJ has. That's the problem.
Yeah.
That's a big problem. He's got the quickness.
He has such a weird hitch to
it's
his
got
shot.
A little bit of a hitch. I feel like it kind of comes out a little flat maybe. But you can't – I don't even know – having seen, and I guess that's part of the problem, is that the freshest memory we all have of J.J. Barea in a Mavs uniform is probably
the best he will ever
play. The best he will ever play, and I love what he did for him. And, you know, we can kind of take the balance of that 2010-2011 year and look at it and say, yeah, average it out, and you can kind of see what J.J. Barea is, who he is. Mm-hmm. But he's a way better shooter than Collison is. Mm-hmm. He's going to get killed more on defense, but Collison is not playing with the passion or the want to on defense that he needs to. So right now, Collison and JJ are pretty much the same on defense, if not JJ having an advantage because he can get in and draw charges and he's, you know, at least getting up in there. I feel like Collison is almost playing out of the Roddy B playbook a little bit on defense, which, so at this point, unless he significantly changes his defensive intensity, his ceiling is JJ Barea. And if he changes his defensive intensity, his ceiling is just above J.J. Barea, and only because he's not 5'9 or whatever J.J. is.
Right.
I think that's really what he is. And let's go back. How'd we get him? I reminded one of our listeners about this earlier this week, which is, how'd we get him? We traded Jan Mahimi for him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, look, that doesn't mean that you can't get a little diamond in the rough or a change of scenery trade or whatever. We've talked about that. But guys with starting caliber point guard ceilings don't get traded for Jan Mahimi. Guys with good change of pace point guard ceilings could get traded for Jan Mahimi. And I think that's where we're at on this guy, dude.
The one thing that really stuck out in your analysis of him is that he plays at one speed.
Yeah.
There is only one speed he can play at.
And when he tries to play at a different speed,
no bueno.
It doesn't work.
No bueno.
That's fine.
It just doesn't work as a starting point guard.
I just can't have you doing that. You can't do that as a point guard playing 30 minutes.
Exactly.
Not with his skill set. Now, if he was, you know, this amazing passer and could penetrate and find guys and all this kind of stuff, then, you know, maybe you could make it work. But
it just doesn't seem like the only thing you're now waiting for is to see what he does with Dirk, to see if he can capture any of that JJ lightning in a bottle. But again, you're asking, you have to have him do it as a guy coming off the bench. Because
so,
Fisher has to set the tone.
So he is on his rookie deal. Going to make about, what, $2.5 million next year
ish,
on that qualifying offer.
Ish.
And I don't think anyone's going to offer him more than that.
You've said this before. There's still dumb money out there.
Save the, but he, you know, the dumb money, I don't know though, man. I still haven't figured out how what's his face? Chuck Hayes got that offer. 4 for $40 for Chuck friggin' Hayes. Because what I was going to say was usually the guys that get money whipped, even if they're not considered marquee players, they have a shining moment of some kind.
But you find a team like Sacramento.
But then they give Chuck freaking Hayes 4 for $40. So, okay. I think this means that if you're a Maverick fan and if you're the Maverick front office and the coaching staff, you just hope to God you can find your starting point guard either at the trade deadline or next summer and use next year to determine with Darren Collison on his fourth year of the 5-year rookie contract deal. Is he your backup? I'd take him as a backup.
Sure, I would take him as a backup as well. But
I need
a proven point guard to play.
I need a point guard, something, because I got Dirk to be Dirk for a couple more years, and I don't know how much of Dirk I'm going to get. We don't know yet. I'm not a doom and gloom on Dirk because I think he's a German robot and because he's freaking Dirk, and anybody who says otherwise can suck it. But regardless, those years are short. Whatever that year number is of Dirk being Dirk, it's not long. It's short. And I want some – you got to have something good. You can't waste the Dirk window. You're not going to get another player as good as Dirk unless you get super lucky.
One of the guys that's been thrown out that could be talked about again in terms of a trade or even a free agent piece is Jose Calderon, who was a guy that was mentioned a lot leading up to acquiring Darren Collison.
Yeah, he was. That's right. Do you grade him as a starting caliber guy, though? I grade him as kind of a
– he's a very poor man.
Kind of just a – what's the right word? Just like a bit player.
He's good at it, though. He's
kind of there. He's like an extra. He's like, you remember how on Saturday Night Live,
Eddie Murphy Saturday
in
Night
the
Live?
Early 90s, how John Lovitz was no longer on Saturday Night Live, but every about month or so, he would just be there. That's Jose Calderon.
I don't know. I see him a little bit better than that. I'm not going to see him as an elite point guard.
John Lovitz is offended by that statement.
I don't care about John Lovitz, to be honest.
Acting.
He's not an elite point guard, but he's definitely a point guard that can be a pure point guard, handle being the bus driver.
I haven't watched him play enough. I'm going to have to go on your assessment is that
he's not going to be dynamic, but he's going to do his job.
A better bus driver than Derek Fisher?
Yeah.
Due to age and ability to do more things?
Yes.
And not have all of his jumpers come up short because he has no legs.
He's not going to be defensively savvy as Fisher, but he's gonna be able to control things on offense. He can be a threat as a shooter, and he's gonna put guys in good spots.
Yeah.
So I like him as an option. I don't think that's actually gonna work in terms of a trade deal right now. But if you wanted him as a piece, the thing you don't want to happen is have him land in LA with the Lakers, which I don't know how they can nut fall into that.
Now, they'll, you know, like I said on Twitter last night, they'll trade their number 14 and number 15 guy for Kevin Love and Chris Paul straight up, and then Darth Vader will blow up another planet and the universe just travels along.
Was that last night?
I think it was.
My nights are so off.
It's been a long day for you, bro.
Long Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
The problem with that, though, with me is I don't think Jose Calderon... Depends what you got to give up for him. What's his contract status right
now? He's the last year of his deal. He's at 10.5, but he's got a 10% trade kicker.
10.5 for Jose Calderon.
This was where dumb money came into play.
Who do you think you are? Just shut up.
What in the world? Dude, I can't.
It was dumb money.
I cannot run a team in this NBA, Brian. How do you expect me to run a team in this NBA when Jose Calderon gets 10.5?
Landry Fields is making 6.2 this year.
That's better value than Calderon at 10. Okay, but to get back to the reason I asked, is that trading for him, I don't feel like gets the Mavs anywhere.
Not this year. I don't think it gets
I don't think he can be... I don't know. I guess he could be your guy if you got some other, you know, A-list guy you're going to bring in who's not a point guard to play alongside Dirk. And I don't know... if Mayo is that guy, and that was the second half of this segment that we're going to talk about. So I guess it depends on who else. I don't know, dude. Here's the thing. You're not going to find out enough in the remainder of this year to know what to pay him.
Right.
So I just don't really know they either already have to know how much they like him and an offer in mind, and they got to already kind of know what the market's going to look like in July, and they got to kind of already know if they think that what they like him plus the market equals a potential potential fit. And if not, don't waste the trade chip on him. Find a trade chip somewhere else. I just don't think I don't think you can solve the point guard problem this year unless you
go back in time and get Goran Dragic.
Yeah, or and decide that he's worth the money, you know, obviously, or something else where you get a guy who you feel like is the keeper, and that's obviously not Jose Calderon. So what about Mayo, dude? This is the biggest freaking just question mark.
I think he's a guy that is definitely putting pressure on himself to succeed because he knows that this is his last big chance to get some good money in the league. But he wants to succeed in Dallas. he wants to show that he can be not necessarily the guy he was heralded to be to come into the league, but be a guy that can be a force in the league. So
he's got the talent, man.
He definitely does. But like I said, he's kind of thrown me off as a facilitator because it seemed like he had that knack to do it. I said awkwardly that he has nice eyes in the sense that he could find guys to pass the ball to, but he's not doing a good job of it. And he's getting too much attention now defensively where that's exposing him in that aspect. But now,
he's been like the worst one as bad a defender. Defender. Come on, Ryland. Learn how to talk. I have a drop of DA saying learn how to talk. Anyway, he's been as bad an offender in the turnover battle as anybody. Uh-huh. And with him, I think it is that he is having a hard time adjusting to all that attention. And you're right. He, early in the season especially, he really showed a good instinct for finding an open guy.
It was those eyes.
And I think he still has that instinct. But the problem is, he's trying to execute on that instinct, and defenses are doing things now that he's not used to seeing them do. And so,
as the guy,
he sees something developing. He makes a decision to try to throw a ball here or there. The defense does something that he hasn't seen enough of before to know to anticipate, because you're right, he hasn't been getting triple teamed. And he throws the ball, lets the ball go, and boom, it hits a guy in the forehead. And, you know, it's a runaway dunk on the other end. Blake Griffin jumps from half court, and Penny Marshall stands up and claps. So
Billy Crystal cheers.
And Billy Crystal cheers. So I think that with him, there's that. And I think that without Dirk, hopefully that kind of tilts the pendulum. I'm sorry, with Dirk, that will tilt the pendulum back to where it was the first month or so of the season. So I like that about him. I think the organization really likes him.
Uh-huh.
Remember, part of the controversy surrounding Delonte had little things to do with O.J. Mayo. He and O.J. were together on the second bus. He and O.J. were together clubbing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, all of a sudden, it was like O.J. was kind of the new prize puppy, and, you know, that big dog over there that's been hanging out in the backyard was teaching the new puppy to go, you know, poop on the flowers, and they got rid of the big dog. I mean, I know there was a lot more to it.
I wanted to see where this was going.
A lot. I made it up as I went. There was a lot more to it than that with Delonte.
Right.
Obviously. But that was part of an undercurrent there. I think that was an indication of how highly the organization thinks of OJ in terms of his talent, in terms of his fit with Dirk as someone who's like Jet. And I actually think that barring a real drop-off from this year, or barring an explosion from OJ that suddenly makes him worth $15 million a year, I think if he lands somewhere in the 8 to 11 a year range, I actually think the Mavericks are going to try pretty hard to keep him, because I think what they're going to do is they're going to look at him and they're going to say, what can he do alongside Dirk like Jet was able to do? And that's really good, and then we can put another piece around that,
right,
and then maybe make something happen for Dirk here in these next couple years. And then, look, because guess what? When Dirk's gone, Dirk's gone. Unless you land another superstar somewhere along the way, which is going to take a miracle that is unforeseen at this point. No, Dwight Howard is not leaving L.A. Unless that happens, the first couple years after Dirk are going to be terrible.
Right.
They just are. So, at that point, who cares if you're paying O.J. Mayo a couple million more? Hell, you got a minimum team salary of like 30-something million. A couple million when you're fielding a rebuilding squad is not, you know, the end of the world. And if you think it significantly increases your ability to do something with Dirk because it mirrors something you've already been able to accomplish with Dirk relative to Jet and Mayo being comparable, then I think you may look into it a little harder. So that's my theory on OJ right now. There's two things, like I said, that can derail that theory. One is that he kind of falls off. That might still happen. We don't know. He's OJ Mayo. He shoots you into games, he'll shoot you out. Not like J.R. Smith, but he can still shoot you into games and shoot you out. And then the other thing is, if he does exactly what he has done up to this point, I think Dirk is going to strengthen his game to a certain degree. I just don't know if the productivity is going to be the same because, you know, Dirk's going to be taking some of the oxygen out of the room.
He's just not going to have to make so many decisions when Dirk is back. He can be more reactionary. Just get the ball, shoot.
You just
get the ball, take one step, shoot.
You hope, though, that the share of shots that are going to Dirk as a result of that, or I'm sorry, that are going to Dirk and not Mayo, don't affect Mayo's efficiency in a negative light to the degree that it's a net negative on the entire team. And hopefully it won't be. I think he, I don't know. You want to look at his history and kind of be like, I don't know. But I think that in this environment with Dirk being head and shoulders the best player he would have ever played with, and he's still going to have to shoulder a hellacious load. I mean, who else is going to score? You know, we talked about Kamen. You know, he can only play so many minutes because he's limited defensively. Mm-hmm. You know, is Vince Carter hot or not? I don't know. Let's see. Other than that, you're kind of out. So I think that there's a risk that if Dirk does improve OJ's outlook, that suddenly the Mavericks, by virtue of succeeding with OJ, have priced themselves out of the OJ market.
I think $8 million is definitely on the very low end of the spectrum. They're going to have to look more at 11.
He'd have to have a pretty rough second half.
Yeah, you're looking more towards 11 to 12, mm-hmm. which I think is still reasonable for what they want to do because they like him. He's got the great work ethic. He's doing what he can, but it's just not producing so great in certain areas. As in terms of a shooter, he's doing great. I mean, he's not going to shoot 51% or 50% from three all year. You're going to expect that to drop, but if it drops to like 47, 46, you're going to take that any day of the week. He's got the work ethic. He's going to be ready to go. It's just a matter of can he sustain.
When Dirk was on the broadcast the other night during the second quarter of whatever, was it Sacramento game? When he was on the broadcast, that's one of the things he brought up was how much Mayo is working after hours, how much he's shooting.
He's in the gym.
And he's saying, you know, he reminds me of me out there coming in late.
It reminds me of me, obviously.
Dirk was saying when I was younger and wasn't married and all this, you know, that's what I would do.
Watching Harry Potter.
What I'd love to know is whether or not how that relates to what Mayo did or didn't do in Memphis. Is it a matter of he's kind of had a kind of turned over a new leaf? He's grown up a little bit. You know, you're such a baby coming into the league out of high school. I mean, I was a knucklehead at that age. We've had this conversation before. The I was a knucklehead conversation. But 24, you know, getting to be 25, is it that he's got to change the scenery and turned over a new leaf? Or did he do a little bit of this in Memphis? And the reason I ask is because if this really is turning over a new leaf for him and he's never quite put in the hours like this, then, you know, he might really be a 47% three-point shooter when he's putting in the work.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to imagine a guy improve so dramatically without it either being a fluke or it being really, you know, something that you can sustain.
Just striking that nerve that...
There's guys that can shoot mid-40s from three. They aren't usually athletic.
They're usually Steve Novak.
Yeah, they're usually those kind of guys, Hubert Davis types. But I just don't know. It's something that I think you have to look at because if he can do that right now with the attention he's getting, he damn sure ought to be able to keep it up with Dirk. So if he does that, I mean, hell, it's already almost January, Brian, and he's still holding that three-point percentage up where pretty high.
Yeah.
Granted, he started the year like 60-something, which was ridiculous, but... You know what I mean?
You're at 25 games where the sample size is significant.
If he keeps this up, if Dirk has the effect on the court spacing the way he should, then you could turn around and have OJ Mayo, like I said, hitting 45-47% of his threes for a year.
He's at 51% right now.
And then you got to go, well, damn, he did it for a whole season. I mean, season-long outliers on a statistic like that, they happen. But you can't just say, oh, man, it was a fluke for an 82-game season.
And he's raised his numbers just in general from the field. I mean, for the first part of the year, he was terrible inside the three-point line. And now he's at 48% from the field.
He's gotten a little bit better about...
He's attacking.
...picking times to attack. Yeah, I would agree with that. And I just hope that when Dirk comes back, that he doesn't take those open looks and those kickouts and those pick-and-pops... and just jack it up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny. It's like all those things I just said, it's like I'm so on the friggin' fence with OJ. I am optimistic, and yet I'm still as absolutely cautious as I can be because I'm looking at a guy with a resume, and I've watched him play, and I think I know what he's like and what he's about. But I'm still optimistic. It's just one of those things where it's touch and go all year. We're going to be reevaluating and revisiting, you know, kind of his grade, his report card every month on this thing. You know?
I think I've been pretty sold on, and now I'll just part it with this. I've been sold on him from the first week he came into town. I mean, seeing him on the first day and then getting to talk to him off and on that first week, it just seemed like he was a man that kind of knew that things weren't going his way, but he luckily fell into a good situation with a great coach.
Maybe the contract situation kind of scared him straight a little bit.
And he's in a situation where he's playing, like you said, with the best player he's ever going to play with probably. And it's a situation where if he plays things right and does the work, it's going to work out for him ultimately. And it just looks, I'm sold.
Brian is sold. I'm very cautious, but I have hopes. That's like the storyline of the year. You know, we talked about earlier that I thought this was going to be a fun season to watch because of things like that, and it's turned into a drag because the Mavericks turn the ball over 600 times a week. But that's going to be something fun to watch regardless because he is so talented, and there's possibility of, you know, Mavericks kind of, you know, finding a little gold nugget there.
When's the last time we've seen someone that young actually mature on the Mavericks?
Dirk.
That's it.
Yeah. Dirk and Nash.
Yeah.
Together at pretty much the same time.
Yeah, that's a long time
ago. I mean,
ago.
Josh Howard, unmatured.
Yeah.
Josh, unmatured. Who else we got?
Marquise.
JJ kind of grew up.
A little bit.
But it wasn't on the same scale.
No.
His ceiling was much lower.
Yes.
Yeah, Josh and Marquise, unmatured. Devin Harris, stunted.
Yes.
I mean, yeah. So there you go. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Brian Gutierrez, he is a Mavs historian.
Not so much.
We're going to take a break and talk about Mavs history on the break because Brian's a Mavs historian. And then when we come back from the break, we're going to do what, executive?
We're
going to
talk about Dirk.
Okay,
more
I
depth.
Like that guy.
We're going to talk about Roddy.
I don't like that guy.
And we're going to talk
I don't like that guy.
We're going to talk about
at all.
The chase for the 500 record.
Oh, okay. I like that. Next.
Whataburger.
That guitar solo is the best part of that song.
I like it.
I have totally neglected my guitar playing, man. Ever since I had a kid, or even before that.
I've neglected my ukulele playing.
But I did get a bag of Fritos.
That's a game changer right there.
So it's all good. Mavericks Outsider Report, episode 68's in full swing, second hour.
Yay!
Brian, second hour's upon us. I'm glad you're so excited about it.
Yay!
Such enthusiasm here at the Ted Jones Broadcasting Center. Oh, boy. What are we going to talk about now, dude?
Let's talk about Dirk.
All right. I like Dirk. I think he's good. He's tall for his age. He's German. He shoots a lot, but it's okay. and I have a t-shirt with him doing the one back leaner, one leg lean backer, whatever.
This is the lean away now.
The lean away. Okay. I'm okay with that. Guys all over the league are copying that, man.
Kobe. Durant.
Yeah, I noticed somebody. I feel like somebody else did it the other day. Somebody kind of spare.
Sagana Jop?
Not that spare.
Oh, okay.
So what about Dirk, man? Dirk, I need me some Dirk. I need good news. When's Dirksmas?
We don't know yet. That's the sad part.
It is.
The thing that has been promising, even though I don't know if it's that big of a deal, is that he's been warming up on the court leading up to games. So he's definitely participating in basketball activities.
Just seeing
now.
That was encouraging. Just seeing him working out on the court, running lines, getting up shots. It looks like normal basketball activity, although obviously he's not. He stopped short of full practices and
it's
things
light.
Of that nature.
It's light.
But to see that, that's an encouragement. It makes you feel good inside. Here's the deal. Do you remember, I think it was last week, there was a story where Dirk mentioned something about, you know, it's probably going to be after Christmas before I come back.
I think when he was talking during the Clippers game.
And
then there's a line from Sefko's article where saying, I'm not close.
Right. And there was a blog entry that hit ESPN Dallas courtesy of Timmy Mack or
Durrett?
Maybe Ricky D, as I and only I call him just now, 5 seconds ago. Yeah, one of those guys in the headline, and you know, I don't know if those guys write the headline when they blog, or does an editor write the headline? I mean, I don't know the corporate structure of everything, but the headline was Dirk not returning until 2013, and that's like a headline that pisses me off because, number one, the headline is written with the intent to imply that he's going to be gone for a long time, and then when you sit back and you look at the schedule, and when he first spoke to the media, remember he spoke to the media and had kind of a media availability that was announced, and everybody kind of came and huddled around him in the locker room, and he kind of gave an update on where they were.
Mm-hmm. That was, I was there.
Mid-November or so.
Yes.
Or no, it was the day... No, it had to have been October because it was the day Big... No. We found out about surgery the day Big Tex burned. Anyway, it was mid-November, and I was like, oh, shit, it's going to be bad news. And it wasn't. It was just everything's going as scheduled. You do the math on that, and it had it the last week of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So I reacted to that story at first going, what is this? I clicked on it, and I'm like, there's no new news. This is on schedule. Why are we trying to be Geraldo with this crap? But it still sucks because I want me some Dirk.
The latest thing we heard from the Minnesota game from Eddie Sefko was saying that he's not close to returning to the lineup. And this sort of goes with what you're saying, that he's not close, but he's making progress. We still haven't heard of any news of setbacks. He's doing... From what I've seen in the locker room when we're talking to Mark Cuban, he's doing a lot of weight training, building up that leg strength.
The strength is like the foundational aspect to everything because it helps prevent re-injury. So, obviously, you want to, you know, overdo that, if anything. So, it's good to hear that he's working. Not close is such a nebulous thing to me, though. Like,
he doesn't want to put a time on it, though.
I don't blame him. I mean, because he just doesn't want to get beat down with the expectations and questions. And he probably, the team is probably so, like, fed up with not having the ability to do anything on offense that's reasonably decent. That,
damn
you know,
it, Dirk.
He probably doesn't want to throw them any bone that would be, like, you know, disingenuous or, you know, he's so Dirk. Dirk is so Dirk. I mean, this guy is just such a huge gift to the DFW sports scene. Hey.
Scooter, can I get a breath thing?
He's such a gift to the DFW. Yeah, exactly.
We are the champions. We are the champions. No time for losers. Because we are the champions of the world.
Next up on the Mavericks Outsider Report. I eat Fritos while Brian plays all of Dirk's greatest hits.
I'm still working on that.
I'm waiting. Anyway, I think that he's just so Dirk that he doesn't want to be inaccurate. It's just as simple as that. You know? He just wants to be straight up with everybody. He doesn't want to BS anybody. He doesn't want to build up any false expectations. He's just super dry about it. He says, hey, here's the deal. Here's where I'm at right now. And that's fine and dandy. When do you, Brian Gutierrez, expert among experts, truly expect him to be back? It is December 17th right now. I think it's like right before New Year's at the earliest.
I am looking at it's what, December 17th?
Yeah, right now. Fritos are so good. Like I had.
You can't stop, dude.
I hadn't had Fritos in forever, and then I bought a bunch of Fritos for when we had people over for chili. And I had some leftovers, and here we are.
It's a game changer. Part of me wants to say the 28th, which is the second game of a back-to-back, and it's a home game against Denver. Part of me just wants to say that because that's still a full... Can't do math. 10 days from now. So he'd have time. That's just a really early estimate of what that could be. But if it stretches on, then you're looking into January. So obviously the 28th is my optimistic view. If I was looking more realistically, maybe the 7th. 7th of, yeah. Either the 5th or the 7th of January, where they have two days off before the 5th, which is a home game against New Orleans, and then they head out on the road for three games. So get that game under your belt, get a day off, and then you're out on the road getting it going again.
Yeah.
So that's still roughly 2 to 3 weeks away.
Okay.
One thing that's really kind of been sticking in the back of my mind as I try to get this knot out of my shoe is that him and Steve Nash are kind of joined at the hip. And
I hadn't thought about that. You're so deep.
Nash has a nagging injury right now, which seemed like it was supposed to only be like 2 weeks, but it stretched on for like a month to 6 weeks.
That thing, at least Dirk's is as advertised.
Yeah.
That Nash thing, man, that has to be...
just a case of old.
That has to be giving everybody the bubble guts from the L.A. side. I mean,
they
seriously,
don't take
dude.
Much to get the bubble guts in
I know,
L.A., though.
I know, that's the thing. But seriously, I mean, this was something that happened, and you're like, okay, it's a couple weeks and whatever, and it's November 1st, I can deal with it, and... Christmas and Cat's still not practicing.
He actually started today.
Oh, did he?
He just barely started to practice today.
That's why we have you on the show, Brian.
And when I eat a Frito. But these guys are older, and injuries just take a while to heal.
Tell me about it, bad back.
So that's something.
Still haven't done anything since my back backboard slapping debacle.
Have you learned your lesson, though?
No, man. I'm going to slap the backboard as long as I still can. There will come a day when I won't be able to get that kind of lift anymore.
So that kind of concerns me in that aspect, but the Mavs
That's
are...
true. That does kind of make you a little bit nervous. But, man, this Robo-Dirk, man.
He's still doing okay.
Nash is older.
He has a much bigger history
and
of injuries.
Nash is older. Yeah, and he's older.
Let's
move... And he's not Robo-Dirk.
Let's move on.
Let's talk about the quest for 500.
Okay.
Because that's very relevant to this discussion about old Durkee and whether or not he's going to come back on day one, day two, day three, whatever. The thing we've been talking about, everybody's been talking about it, is just fingers crossed, toes crossed, you know,
eyes crossed,
praying to Joe Boo. All we want is to be 500, give or take, when Durkee comes back.
You would love to be 500.
Oh,
yeah. Love it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know... The Mavs had a soft early schedule, and we didn't really talk about it much. Charmin soft, as Charles Barkley would say, soft as my stomach, which is what he used to say the Mavs were in like 04.
You're the historian.
We're both. Dude, I watched a lot of Inside the NBA back in my single days, but anyway.
That means I watch a lot of Inside the NBA.
I wish I did. I don't know what my deal is lately. You know what?
It's late.
We're watching it tomorrow. Or Thursday, whatever.
You can watch it. I will watch it at my place.
Yeah. Not together. No. That's not something you just come out. Hey, you want to come over and watch Inside the NBA? Okay. No, that's like what you watch after the game as you're like falling asleep.
See you in an hour.
Okay, so what we wanted to do was just be 500. And the problem with this
theory.
They
were there.
Is that they're there, but they're there going now
south
into... A friggin' hard stretch of games.
Yes.
So the problem with being 500 is that if you're about to get your ass whooped by three or four teams over the span of 9 games where you play a bunch of rough teams, you need to be above 500 going into that stretch. And the Mavs weren't. They were at 500. And now we got Miami, Memphis, San Antonio, OKC, Denver, San Antonio all in a row. What was that? 7-6 games. And then, but you've got also Philly, Washington, not a big deal, but then another Miami.
New Orleans is a scrappy team.
Then New Orleans is scrappy, and then you got...
Utah will beat you up.
Utah at Utah, and that gets you to January 7th, and that's, you know, maybe that's kind of the median for when Dirk might come back.
You have to hope he comes back.
If he comes back like right after New Year's or right before New Year's, I think you're like really happy, and I think if, you know, he takes a little time to get rounded into shape, you're expecting it... A little after January 5th or 6th or so. So that middle point there, I think, is that Utah game. So that's a rough game right there. So how many games is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So that's 11 games, which includes 6 on the road, which also includes games against 2 against Miami.
That would make it 33 games into the season.
2 against the Spurs, OKC, Denver, and Utah. And then your iffies are... Philly, Washington, and New Orleans. That's rough, man.
It's very rough. And like I said, that's 30. I already lost count. That's more 35.
Ooh.
That's
man.
35 games into the season. You're almost at that halfway point. And right now, the Mavericks, if the playoffs started today, everyone would be like, hold up. we're not ready for the playoffs. But they would be saying that the Mavericks are the 11th seed. They're on the outside.
Oh, my God.
They're on the outside looking in. But you know what?
Eton Thomas.
They're a full game ahead of them.
They're
a full game ahead of the Lakers,
though. If we miss the playoffs, you think we could get another Eton Thomas?
It's always possible.
And his big turf toe that he had for 2 years?
It's always possible. Anything is possible. Kevin Garnett told us that. But did you hear what I said? There's still a game up on the Lakers.
I know. That's crazy.
That's bad.
That's why I don't care what's happening in DFW right now. We're dealing with expectations that were already modified coming into the year before we figured out that Dirk was going to need arthroscopic surgery on his knee. The Lakers have freaking Dirk. They have Dwight.
You would cry if that happened.
Man, I'd be so mad at Dirk for doing that to me. Don't do that to me. I mean, they got
obviously,
Dwight.
I love LA.
Kobe. Powell.
I have that song on my iPod.
Steve Nash. Antoine Jameson just getting garbage buckets.
Jody Meeks just shooting it up from three.
Yeah, that's terrible for them. Dude, they'll figure it out, though. I don't know. I shouldn't say that. We need to talk about that at a later date. So let's look at the schedule here. Okay. Like I said, that is a grand total of, what did I say, 11? 11 games, which includes 6 at home.
5 on the road. That would mean math. Uh-oh. Pen's coming out.
Vamp for me.
All right. So let's cover it again. Let's go again. We might as well, because you're going to be writing it down. Okay. So it's going to be Philly at home, Miami at home, back-to-back, though, with Memphis on the road, and then San Antonio on the road, OKC on the road, Denver back-to-back, but it's at home, San Antonio at home, and then you can move to January. January 1st is at Washington. January 2nd, back-to-back, at Miami, 2 games off. January 5th, New Orleans at home. And then, as you said, Utah on the 7th, which is the road game, which is where we stopped.
All right, so what I basically have here is 7 games against really good teams, 4 games against not-so-really good teams. But the not-so-really good teams include Philadelphia and Denver, who are better than Dallas right now.
Denver's a playoff team right now. They would be in the playoffs.
So you got 11 games, 9 of which are going to be against teams that
I got the knot out of my shoe. But
good, I'm glad. Better than you, you know. Washington's rough. New Orleans is pretty rough. And then all but 2 of those games against the good teams, 5 out of 7, are on the road. You have Memphis on the road, San Antonio on the road, OKC on the road, Miami on the road, Utah on the road, Miami at home and San Antonio at home. Both of which I have tickets to, which means I'm going to have a hell of a lot of enemy jerseys to deal with.
How drunk are you going to be?
That sucks. I'm probably not. That's the thing. I don't really do drunk at games. I do drunk at home. Is that depressing? Is that a problem? Courtney's laughing at me for that one. It's true, though, isn't it? Yep. I do drunk at home, mostly.
I just drink when I'm at home, alone, with the team.
No, I'm usually at home with people. I've been drunk at the ballpark like once or so, but that was rain delay induced. So
I only drink when it's
5
dark.
Of those 7 are on the road.
They're not
all 7 are hard as hell.
They're not going to be at 500.
Are
when
you
Dirk
lucky?
Gets back.
I want to figure out where they're going to even be. Are you?
All right, give me the rapid fire.
How are you even?
Tell me these games and write this down as I say it. Tell me the games.
You want them in order?
Yes.
In order of the schedule.
And tell me back-to-back whatever.
All right, Philadelphia at home.
Win. Boom.
Miami at home.
That's a loss.
At Memphis, back-to-back.
That's a loss.
Yikes. San Antonio at San Antonio.
That's a win.
Wow.
Taking it.
Look at you. At Oklahoma City after 3 days
rest.
That's
a loss.
Okay. Then you've got back home for Denver on a back-to-back.
That's a loss.
Back home from Oklahoma City.
It's a loss.
Okay.
They're going to run them down.
You've got San Antonio at home.
They're going to lose that
2
game.
Days later. Okay, great. I'll be there for that one, too. Yay.
You're so excited.
At Washington, January
Win.
1st.
Washington, dude.
Yeah, I know. At Miami,
lose.
On a back-to-back.
Lose.
Ugh. Dude, this is going to be rough. Cowboys better pull something out of their ass. Otherwise, I'm not going to be in a good mood. All right.
Tony Romo.
At Utah, January 7th.
Lose. So what's that? They lost.
Wait a minute. Sorry, I forgot. At New Orleans at home, January 5th.
2 days off. I'll give them a win.
All right, that gives them 4-7.
Woo!
So 4-7 on top of where they're at right now leaves them at
15-20. So they would be 5 games below .500. But really, though, if you look at that, we're all saying we would be throwing a parade if the Mavericks would be at 500 without Dirk. This team was 2-7 when he sat out the year they won the title. So they are 5 games below.
You know what? You have an uncanny ability.
I spin.
To find the silver lining.
I spin, dude.
And I was so ready.
You to had just it lined up.
Pop your balloon so hard. But that 2-7 thing is a hell of a good point. I'm all credit due. That is a hell of a good point. That team that won a championship went 2-7 without him. This team that has played like dog
and it probably
crap.
Wasn't against this kind of talent as well.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to go back and look.
I will have to look that up.
But we have them going 1-6 against the talent.
Which is reasonable. And they might grow a nut and get one of these games. They might. You just never know.
It's reasonable because you got to think, man, they can't lose all 7, can they?
That's
basically
they
what...
They could,
yeah.
But they might not.
That's the reasoning that goes into it. So, but still, dude, 500's tough. 500's pretty tough.
It is, but like I said, they did it before.
So at a 500 winning percentage, which would be... let me click on my calculator here. 15 divided by 35 is a winning percentage of 42.8%. Where would that put them in the West right now?
What was the percentage?
42.85. So 42.8, 40.9.
Oh, they would still be worth. They would be 2 teams back of where they are right now.
So they'd be 13th.
Yes.
Boy, that is tough. That is so tough.
You've got to be around 500 to be in the playoffs right now. Seventh and eighth
seed.
Yeah,
that's usually about where it lands.
It should be. And that's all that it really matters at this point for Dallas. You're not trying to reach up. If Dirk was healthy going into the season, I said, you're shooting for 4th or 5th. But now that Dirk, that would have been better if it was in Sharpie. Can you read that?
On the stream, sure.
Okay.
Maybe.
But like I said.
I'm putting it here so that you can be held accountable.
I will be held accountable. I'm not afraid of that. You have to hover around 500, and like I said, that's all you're shooting for is to sneak in as the 7th or 8th seed.
Put something down on your magic notebook of notes.
I'm writing it down.
I want to explore. I don't know.
I've written explore.
I don't know when the right time would be.
Dot, dot, dot.
Let's say like late January. Let's say like before the trade deadline because we're going to be talking hot stove talk. Can you say that to basketball? Hot stove talk? We're going to be talking about player movement and... You know, fold or go all in or somewhere in between, just check all day, whatever. What is there to be, let's debate the merits of what is to be gained by going, you know, 43-39 and sneaking into the playoffs.
Sneaking in.
Because I think there's a big,
yeah,
there's a big back and forth to weigh there. I think there's schools of thought that go one way or the other. So, final verdict, you heard it here, folks. Folks first. Weekdays, dude. I have jobs and a baby and stuff. You will not have a 500 team coming out of the no Dirk window.
If you do, God bless America.
Oh, my
America.
Goodness. What happens if OJ just goes off? And what happens if, I don't know.
Darren Collison finds it.
Yeah.
I pulled this up. They lost to San Antonio on the road, Indiana on the road. They lost to Orlando at home. Oh, are you writing this down?
Kind of.
Okay, I'll start over. San Antonio on the road. They lost to Indiana on the road.
Okay, you can go faster.
Orlando at home.
Okay.
OKC at home, they lost.
Okay.
They beat Portland at home. They won at Cleveland. And they lost at Milwaukee. They lost against San Antonio at home. And they lost against Toronto at home. So okay. That's not nearly the competition of what they're facing.
That was 9 games, 4 good opponents, 5 bad opponents.
It's dramatically different this
that
time
That counts
around.
Orlando as a bad opponent. You could probably throw Orlando in there. And
they're, an if it, they're an iffy.
So either way, it was pretty well 50-50.
Yeah. Dramatically different this time
Dude,
around.
Dude, see, there you go. You just found a great argument. I want everybody to make sure that we're clear on what Brian just said. The Mavericks, who we slate right now, to go 4-7 for the next 11 games, leaving them at 15-20, wrapping up 35 games without Dirk, assuming Dirk comes back on January 9th. Okay.
Hey, Dirk, you're coming back on January
15 and 20. He points out this team, which is oftentimes dog mess, 15 and 20. He points out that the 2011 Mavs, when Dirk had his knee problem, without him for 9 games with a team that won the championship, supporting cast, including Tyson Chandler, the guy that most of you wanted to give all the money to because he was going to be the number two guy.
Brendan Haywood.
And, of course, the great Brendan Haywood and the great Sasha Pavlovich probably at that time.
He was there.
So they went 2-7. That team went 2-7 against
San Antonio.
50-50 teams, good teams, bad teams. Mm-hmm. This team is looking at going 15-20.
This is a gauntlet.
15-20 against 50-50 good teams, bad teams. I'm just saying because you got a good – I'm saying sample size. Mm-hmm. That's actually very convenient that 9-game stretch was a pretty fair sample, and 35 games is almost half the season. So that's a fair sample. Mm-hmm. So my point is 2-7 versus 15-20.
You'll take it.
I mean, wow. Rick, dude. It's Rick.
He's a master magician.
It's Rick.
We're going to have to talk about Roddy Moore next episode, but the point is we're both very down on Roddy. We'll dig more deep, but his time might be kaput. This is our first question that we'll dig into more next week. Does he get traded? Are you passing on the question? Does he get traded?
I had more to say by crunching Fritos than anything I had left to say about Roddy, because I've said everything about Roddy. I've been on every side, 360 degrees of this damn guy, on multiple times.
Sounds awkward.
I've been on the fence. I've been outside one side of the fence, the other side of the fence.
You've been leering over the fence,
straddling the fence, under the fence, digging post holes for the fence, picking out barbed wire for the fence. I've been all over the map. And I've basically given up on the guy like 8 times. He is just not an NBA player, man. I just don't think so. He's just like this freakishly athletic dude. And
From Guadalupe.
I keep going back to Tony Dumas. Tony Dumas was a freakishly athletic dude. But Tony Dumas had a short NBA career. You know, you felt like you had all this potential. He was 10 times the basketball player in terms of basketball than Roddy B is. 10 times a basketball player. I don't know, man. You just can't play at this level when you don't start until you're 17 or whatever. You just can't.
The name is Dumas.
I'm laying down the gauntlet. Do we have any examples of guys that put together productive NBA careers that didn't start until they were well into their teens, you know, like late teens? Because that's about what Roddy was, right? Like 16, 17?
Yeah.
I don't know for sure. I'm just guessing, but I think it's somewhere in that range. I just don't think it can happen, man. You know, if they'd have got to him when he was 10, it'd probably be a whole different story. This guy'd probably be, I don't know, who can you compare that game to? It's tough. You know, Monte Ellis or somebody.
Yeah, I mean, Brandon Jennings type of guy.
Yeah, okay. So,
a guy that just knew how to play at that age.
He's somebody who maybe he gets traded, but I don't know what for other than just a second round pick.
He's a part of a bigger piece.
A throw in?
Yeah. And I wanted to mention this earlier.
I wonder if there's anybody out there that would actually view him as a change of scenery reclamation.
Charlotte's a mess. They would always take on that kind of guy.
Charlotte's like our number one trading partner. This guy, though, he shot 50% from the field when he was a rookie. 40,
he went 50, 40, and 80.
40 from three, yeah. I mean, you just don't...
That's where the outlier gets scary when you think about Mayo.
You just don't wake up
but
and do that.
It's different.
It's different You just don't wake up and do that crap, Brian.
One of the things I wanted to mention when we were talking about Collison and...
On a good team, on a 50-win team.
Yes, yes. And we can go to break after this, is that... talk about a throw-in piece was in the Mahimi deal. Dante Jones has been a nice piece. He shoots a lot, probably more than I want him to, but as a defender, he's doing what you want him to do.
And on this team, it's kind of hard to blame him.
Right.
Because half the time, it's probably like, well, it's as good of a chance as anybody else has got. Mm-hmm. There's 7 guys draped on Mayo and the coach and 2 refs. So, you know, here we go. But you're right. He's been serviceable. He's been a good defender. Except for when he really looks for the shot, the ball doesn't stick with him.
Right.
But he does kind of get that every now and then. He's like,
damn
it.
On the drive, he sticks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's got a little bit of history. We know that he can kind of hit three with some efficiency if he gets enough looks and he's geared towards that. So I think he's a good little fit. I think he's somebody that you would like to, you know, keep around beyond this year if it's the right price and it makes sense. I mean, you can always use guys like that, veterans like that, I think.
For sure. So, yeah, that's one I wanted to throw in there. Too bad it's not Darren Collison as that main piece right now. But we'll have to see how that goes for the next couple weeks. We're going to take a break. We're going to quick hit Nuggets.
I'm taking y'all back so old school on this track right now. I have a cassette tape.
Show it.
Stream. Dig Boom. It.
If you can't read that, that says Cool in the Gang.
Cool in the Gang post JT Taylor. Question. Is JT Taylor the white Peter Cetera, or is Peter Cetera the black JT Taylor? Discuss. We'll be back on the other side of this break.
Yo! The party's across the street featuring the greatest band in the world! More Day to Time!
Damn it.
Yo! The party's across the street featuring the greatest band in the world! More Day to Time!
Welcome back to episode 68.
68,
also known as the Fuck Up Show.
I love it, though, because I know you're so mad, but you don't need to be. You really don't need to be.
That's part of the charm.
I know.
It's like, come on, it's so simple. How can you screw up something?
I can see the wheel spin in your head.
How can you screw up something so simple, Rylan?
Before we get started on Nuggets, since we kind of went hardcore already on the schedule, can we just use this as our main finale segment?
Yes.
Okay.
Definitely.
I think we should. What do we do with Nuggets, Rylan? What do we do?
Nuggets is when we like to take a look around the NBA, the league that the Mavericks are a part of. There's other teams in that league that also play basketball. Those other teams will sometimes generate news, things that we want to talk about. We like to take a look at what everybody else is talking about regarding their teams. Do we care? Are we supposed to care? Does anyone else care? We like to just talk about it. And look at it through our Mav-colored glasses. Because we all know, we go through life wearing Mav-colored glasses. And with that, Brian, give me the first nugget.
This is an oldie but goodie nugget that we missed last week when we had our sabbatical. This is the Houston Rockets play-by-play announcer kind of having fun being excited about the Lakers losing against the Rockets. So if we could have the sound down a little bit. And hopefully this doesn't explode our eardrums. This was the play-by-play call at the end. If this will load, letting it load.
Smith beyond the arc, raises up for a deep three in the lead. Missed it! Rebound, Meta World Peace. He throws it up, no good. Tapped up, Jameson, no good. The game is over! The game is over! The Lakers have just pooped their big boy pants, and the Rockets have come from 17 down to win it 107-105. Boy pants and... poop their big boy pants, and the Rockets have come from 17 down to win it 107-105.
Pooped their big boy pants.
Please tell me that made Bad Radio Homer Call of the Week.
I wouldn't know, but it's
oh,
possible.
Oh my goodness.
Pooped their big boy pants.
Schadenfreude, brother, Schadenfreude. You know, that's the thing though. At what point does it no longer become, I don't know. I was going to say, at what point does it no longer become news if the Lakers are losing, if they're not playing very good, but they tried to put together a dream team. They do kind of have a bit of a dream team. They are going to right themselves at some point and punish everyone. I just know it. So let's just revel in their failure.
What if this is the year, though?
That's
Nash
hilarious.
Just...
I love that guy. I hate everything about Houston, but I gained some major respect right there.
What if this is the year, though, that Nash finally breaks down? That's the thing. That's
only 8 years after he was supposed to.
That's the thing that's their guiding light right now, is that when Nash gets back, he'll fix this. But what if he just does not have it this year?
It could happen. It's got to happen eventually. The dude can't play forever.
He cannot. Next nugget. live in the moment nugget. Jeremy Lin, 22 points, 8 assists, and a 102-86 lead over the Knicks as he returns to Madison Square Garden.
What's this story circulating about him and Harden not playing well together?
It just seems like, as we saw last year with Linsanity, once he was the number one guy, the primary option, that's where he was able to thrive. And then people were wondering, how can he work with Carmelo? And they really didn't work, but that's because Carmelo wanted the ball. And Jeremy Lin had his best game of the year when James Harden sat out after the Mavericks game. So that's where the people are trying to put two and two together.
Interesting. Could be something to it. I haven't watched enough. Actually, how many times have the Mavs played the Rockets? Once?
Once.
I've watched one Rockets game this year, so I really couldn't tell you. And Lin didn't play, right?
He did.
Really?
It wasn't that good.
Oh, my God. He was completely invisible.
Yes.
Oh, wow. So much for that Lin sanity, huh?
He got paid out of it, though.
Yeah, he did. Good for him. I mean, he's not a terrible player. I think he's going to put together a career. I just don't know. I think last year was a little bit of a, I don't know, a little bit of an outlier, statistically speaking.
Next.
Yes.
This was another oldie that I wanted to work in. The headline was Deron Williams, or Deron, whichever, has his own personal beat writers.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Who
do they work for? Him?
They work for him and his website. I don't know if you actually pay attention to this, but a lot of players actually have their own websites where they just feature photos, quick recaps of games and stuff like that. But with this, he has personal beat writers that cover ins and outs of his life.
I don't understand the point. I understand the point of having a website to market yourself, pictures, you know, quick thing for some stats, a little bio, and then something that provides a fan with additional insight into your life, whether it's behind the scenes, here's some pictures of D. Will going to the arena or getting up some shots before the game, or here's D. Will at home on the weekend having a barbecue
or here's,
with Uncle Ricky and Delonte.
Or here's Instagram.
Yeah, you know, or whatever. You know, something, but to have a... So tell me this, because when I hear beat writer,
day-to-day grind,
they're doing game story.
Right.
That's terrible. They can't be getting paid. They have to just be doing it for, you know, kind of a way to get their name out there.
And this kind of...
Shirley?
Don't call me Shirley. This kind of met some resistance of what was going on, and then one of his peeps, clarified and says, having a website that presents only some shiny propaganda-driven version of events wouldn't be much interest to anyone. We make sure to cover wins and losses, the positive and negative, on Deron's websites, and actually has pretty thorough news coverage of last season.
Well, let's not get all journalistic, okay? You're writing for the website of the guy who you're writing about. You're not a journalist. Don't pull propaganda. First off, no basketball player is important enough for information about that player to qualify as propaganda.
I don't know if you've heard about Landry Fields.
So, get off your self-important, I went to journalism school crap. Because what you are is you're a feature writer, and there's nothing wrong with that. I do, however, question the wisdom of Deron Williams expending any kind of resource to have someone write game stories.
Well, I just got paid.
I can understand having someone write like a feature about something going on in his life or something. The whole idea is it has to be something that adds value, that adds unique content, and there's no less unique content than a game story. So that's just poor use of resources, man.
Next nugget. This is another... Oh, we lost the apparatus. This is another oldie but definite goodie. Yes. An oldie but goodie. Duncan... This is the headline. Duncan Parker held fake guns to fake ref's head on Halloween. Have you seen this picture?
Show me.
Look at who the referee is.
That's hilarious.
Yes.
Now, why are we not having a big, oh my God, it's a gun, guns are the most evil thing in the world, the devil made all guns, about that?
Well, this was before all of the stuff happened in the NFL. So that would change it a little
bit. So those guys had good timing.
Yes. To say the least.
I don't know that I would do that.
That kind of display is what we would call poor judgment.
But whatever. It's a joke.
It is a joke. It's pretty humorous.
And Joey Crawford did throw Duncan out of a game.
When he was just sitting on the
bench. For absolutely no reason.
Chilling.
And my wife and I were talking about that the other day. We were trying to figure out when it happened. And as it turned out, it literally happened the same weekend as our first date.
Really?
Yeah.
Thank you, Tim Duncan.
We tell basketball time, clearly, in our relationship. So,
I have some breaking news. Mark Spears of NBA Yahoo.
Is he related to Marcus Spears?
Maybe. YahooSports.com says Steve Nash is eyeing his return on Saturday. So he started practice today.
So that'd be like 3 days of practice when you factor in games.
We're talking about practice.
Of course, he's working out when they're having a game, so.
He goes
okay.
to the gym.
Okay, well, I guess we'll see. I guess by this time,
Next episode, we'll see if Nash has broken down.
Yeah, we'll have a little bit of a sample. Maybe take another week to really see what happens there, but I hate the Lakers, man. I don't like them.
Do you like
make them go away?
Do you like Steve Nash and the Lakers purple and gold?
No, it looks weird.
What would be weirder, look, Steve Nash in okay. purple and gold, all or right. Delonte West?
It's time
in
to get real about Steve Nash.
Uh oh.
Okay, this guy is the biggest
I'm stepping away from
metrosexual. I mean, he was here in the old days, and when he came to prominence following the 2000 Olympics, when he balled out for Canada. He was trying to be like, Mr., I'm cool, I don't care, I let my hair just do whatever, I roll out of bed, I throw on my clothes, my hipster clothes or whatever, I don't care.
They weren't hipster clothes at the time.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how
homeless
I'm trying to describe
clothes,
it. Just kind of like, whatever. But all that was just the fashion of the day. Lest we forget he had the bleached hair prior to that. And lest we never forget that his bedhead was fully contrived bedhead. He made it look that way. He absolutely, I have 100%
you have sources?
Confirmation that he made his hair look like bedhead.
Do you have Chris Broussard sources?
And I guess I still like him as a basketball player or whatever, but I don't think I can get down with this.
You don't like him as a person?
I don't know. I used to think he was a good dude. I saw him at the Austin airport. He threw up the deuce, said, what's up? That was right after.
He asked for your autograph?
The 01 playoffs. We were on our way to Vegas. I just turned 21. And he was just by himself there and carrying a backpack, getting on a plane. And I was like, Steve, hey, what's up? And he threw me up the deuce. And I'm like, you know, he's.
This is a reenactment.
He's real. I was like, this dude's real. But you can't be this guy. I saw his suit game the other night.
Hair game?
You cannot, you cannot dress like that and present yourself like that and be real. You have to be one or the other. And I mean, that doesn't make him a bad person. It just doesn't make him real. So, Steve, I'm sorry. Someone like that, that's an undersized dude, it's a scrapper, that, you know, he should be real. It would make, and I guess he is kind of real to people, like, supposedly. But I don't know. I just can't get over the dread. I can't get over the metrosexuality of it
so
all.
So your advice would be, Steve.
You can't care that much about your hair, dog.
Find your 2001 Steve Nash.
No, I mean, even then he was doing contrived bedhead. You can't care that much about your hair. You just can't.
Find your personal chi.
You got any other nuggets?
Yes. Grizzlies hired John Hollinger.
I saw that. What is he going to do for them?
Is the vice president of basketball operations.
What?
Yes.
Dude, that sounds kind of big deal.
It's a big deal.
What?
That's like a step below Donnie Nelson.
The Grizzlies just jumped the shark, dude. That's it. Game over for the Grizzlies.
Let's go to the... That's just a quick hit on that one. Next nugget. Did you hear about Kevin Love's article with Adrian Wojnarowski?
No, I didn't. Great name, though.
He was basically saying that he's mad at David Kahn and... He's mad that he didn't get the max deal on his extension when he wanted it. And Minnesota said, we're only going to do a 3-year deal on it because mainly they're trying to protect themselves to make sure they at least keep Rubio. So people are worried that this is going to be a KG Stephon Marbury thing again.
What'd they give him versus what did he want?
He wanted the full 5-year whatever max it would have been, but they only gave him the 3-year max.
Then why didn't he leave?
I don't know. He could have declined the offer.
I know a team with plenty of cap space last summer.
Toronto.
Had he declined the offer, would he have been free last summer?
He would be free this coming summer.
This coming summer. I know a team with a lot of cap space this summer, too. Because the powder is dry, brother.
What if you had Dirk and Love on the same team?
That'd be
could
tough.
You have them?
That'd be tough.
Would that work?
You'd find a way. You'd have to find a way. Okay. Too much talent there. You'd have to find a way.
What about Dirk, Love, and Roddy?
It's too much talent there.
Let's finish off the episode with our white boy bracket. We're in the final four. Do we want to finish it off or save it for the finals? Save a finals episode.
Let's save it since we're out of time.
Okay, so we are at the final four. Are we cueing the music?
I thought we were saving it.
Are we saving it?
I said let's save it
okay.
since we're almost out of
time. I already forgot.
Plus my drop board broke, so I got to fire it back up again. Tick tock, tick tock.
I was looking at the Fritos and I got distracted.
Ah, dude, it happens to me.
Okay,
dude,
so.
It's still playing.
Now the internet's not working. It's just a smorgasbord of a day. So that's going to be it for episode 68, as Ryland calls it, the
everything's fucking up episode.
Yes, episode of more. We need to figure out when we're going to be back. Christmas is coming up next week, so that's probably next to impossible, I'm guessing.
That's a
positive Ghost Rider.
That's a good point you have there, son. Okay. All right.
I'm 30 now.
This is the part of our show where we... You are 30. You're so grown up. This is the part
I'm
of our
so,
show where
I'm
we...
So money and I know
we
it.
Schedule it on the air because we know that our listeners love this. So...
They feel like they're a part of the show because they get to be in the inner circle.
No.
They're in the inner circle more than Tim right now. Because Tim, I don't know.
I don't know either, but he's coming to the game with me on Thursday, so we'll see.
Big.
You, okay, so.
Christmas is when? Tuesday?
Christmas is Tuesday. God, we're going to have games. We're going to have games the 18th, 20th, 21st, and 23rd.
Oh, crap, that's this week, yeah.
That's a lot of games this week.
Yeah.
You know, then we have a game the 27th. We could do a show.
26th?
Wednesday, if you wanted to. I'm actually going to be off work, and I will be here.
Let's do
if
it.
If your schedule works, then that's fine. If not, we can do another 2-weeker like we did. Either way, I don't care.
If it's possible, you want to do a daytime show?
Oh, yeah, there you go.
I don't know if that's possible, but if it's possible, I'm down.
I think it should be.
If not, we'll do the nighttime show.
Stay by the channel, folks. Anything could happen.
26th for sure, though.
Yeah.
So.
Dude, my shit ain't working.
That's... That's a drop right there. So yeah, episode 68. Wow, I can't talk either. Too much Fritos on the brain. 68 episode of more. One of the more random episodes we've ever had. Oh, I thought we were going to the real. Are you ready for this?
Oh God, no.
Jock jams.
No
hit.
No man, we're going to some 808 drum machine action.
I'm okay with that.
With Dallas's own, the DOC.
I'm okay with that.
Hey, yeah, so why don't we talk about what we can do to help our listeners find this show, or more importantly, because they've already found it, tell other people where to find this show.
They need to go to Podomatic.
We want you to go to Podomatic, M-A-T-I-C, Podomatic.com, and search for Mavericks Outsider Report, or actually just Google Mavericks Outsider Report. That's going to get you there, and also get you to the... oh, my Lord. Inappropriate. It's
going
to get you to the
approved.
Yeah, you totally threw me off there. It's going to get you to the approved method of finding our show, which is iTunes. Go to iTunes. You can click one button, hit subscribe. It's free, which means it costs you nothing. Oh my God. And then you're going to be able to get our show delivered to you automatically.
Excuse
every
me.
Time we do a show. It's going to show up on your phone, your iTunes on your computer, iPad,
iMac,
iPod, whatever. Or if you're using Windows with iTunes, it'll hit you there too. Everywhere. You're good. You need to do that. Tell your friends to do it. Tell your mom,
your
sister, your brother, your cousin.
Your phone with Windows on it.
Everybody. And even your phone with Windows, maybe. I don't know. If you have a phone with Windows, you suck. How could you want that? But anyway... That's the way you can find us. We want you to also find us on Twitter, interacting with us on Twitter, hell, interacting with anybody about sports on Twitter is the best way to use Twitter, in my opinion. And you can find Brian at Ballin with B-R-Y-A-N, Ballin with Brian. He's going to have you covered after he's done burping every 3 seconds.
Lemonade, dude.
He's going to have you done, have you covered. I'm so thrown. He's going to have you covered for Mavs games, practices. He's got access. He's getting quotes after the game. Everything you need, he's going to have you covered. Follow me, Rylan, R-H-Y-L-A-N-R-O-W-E, Rylan Rowe. That's my name. Look me up. Follow me on Twitter.
Please follow him. He's an amazing follower.
All I can really say is you will not be disappointed.
I have never disappointed. I always have to double take to make sure I'm reading the right thing because it's just so random but so spot on.
Your follow Friday on me, which you don't really do follow Fridays much, but you did a follow Friday hat tip to me like a month ago. That got me more followers than anything. I've been called out on radio. I've had retweeted by people that have thousands of tweets. Or I'm sorry, thousands of followers. Lots of people have thousands of tweets. And, you know, you maybe get a couple out of that. Your follow Friday thing, I think I got like 12 new followers right then.
I'm going to do
it. And I was like busy for 3 days, and so I kind of felt like obligated to say, hey, everybody, I swear to God, I'm actually going to tweet something. So
there was pressure.
That's where you left us. We'll see you again on Wednesday, December 26th at some point. We don't know exactly when, but we know it's going to happen.
Maybe Tim will be there for that one.
Maybe Tim will be there for that one.
That's Christmas, man.
Yeah, come on, man. Of course, I don't know if he's going to be out of town or what the deal is. You never know. Family, travel, things happen.
Jesus
happens usually the day before, but then he's alive, and so he's born, and so he's there now. So Merry Christmas to everybody.
Yes, hope
everybody
happy holidays.
Stays safe, has a good time with their family and all that good stuff. Enjoy everything there.
Hope you get everything you want.
Don't eat too much food and get all fat on me.
Including world peace.
Yeah.
And not the meta world peace.
And meta world peace. Look, broadcasters have to stop calling him that. They just have to. They got to start calling him
Ron. It's not going to, though.
They have to. And I guess that's it. That's all I got, bro. Until next time, episode 69 will be coming your way December 26th.
See ya.
Shut it down! Let's go home!
That is a wrap. Woo! Name is Ryland.